But there's lots of other things that have happened this week. There's lots of tragedy, heartache, pain. There's been some room for concern. There's been Ken's heart, Joe Mill's back, Nancy, Kathy's sister Betty, and her poor dog, Parker, Heidi, Connor. There's been lots of heartache, lots of struggle, lots of pain. And sometimes we wonder, why do we have to go through this? Why does God allow this to happen? And we don't always have the answers for that, other that God can use those to bring us closer to Him. And I know in the midst of physical pain, in the midst of emotional pain, of heartache, it can be hard. It can truly be hard to have joy. And it can be hard to seek God. And this last week has been difficult to see my son. He has a broken collarbone. Last Saturday, he broke his collarbone doing something he loves, playing soccer. And now he can't play. He can't even condition. Everything he does is painful. Everything he does now is difficult. He can't hardly sit up and move without it being painful. He's right-handed, and his right hand is in a sling. And so he's awkwardly learning to use his left hand, and it's not going very well for him. And some of you know the pain that the body goes through when there's not something right. So some of you can empathize with that. And he can empathize with you, but it's been painful for me to watch him in a situation that I cannot fix it. The only thing I can do is be there for him. And the only thing I can do for you all is to be there for you. And God is calling us to walk with each other and alongside of each other, to pray for each other, to encourage each other. And I hope through today it can be an encouraging message. An encouraging message, I hope. Life, as Kathy wrote, life in the email this week, life can change in an instant. My supervisor had a niece that passed away this week. She was 12 years old. About a month ago, they were driving. They live in Texas. They were driving down the road. A deer came out and hit the car, on the side of the car, in the back window. And this little girl has been in and out of surgery, in a coma with brain bleeding and fighting for life. And they finally had to pull her off of life support and say goodbye. Life can change in an instant. Life can change in an instant. Where is our focus? It's hard in these moments. It's hard and difficult in these moments of pain and turmoil when the world seems to be falling apart around us, to have joy, to seek God's face. You know, this nation is on edge. There's election day coming up on Tuesday. And all political parties are throwing mud, insulting one another, throwing out half-truths, trying to get a leg up There's divorce, there's poverty, there's pornography, there's slavery, drug use, sexual perversion, abortion. They all saturate the landscape. Lawlessness, hate, rape, theft, murder, all seem to dominate. Threats of war echo across the land as leaders pump their chests and say, I'm so big and I'm so bad and I'm awesome. And you better do what I want or else. There's arrogance in this world. And it's not only in America. It's a human condition. But where is the church? The Spirit of God is moving. It is not all doom and gloom and depression. The Spirit of God is moving. Where is the church? Are we in tune with it? In Revelation 3, 1 through 6, it reads, to the angel of the church in Sardis write, these are the words of him who holds the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your deeds. You have a reputation for being alive, but you are dead. Wake up. Strengthen what remains and is about to die, for I have found your deeds unfinished in the sight of my God. Remember, therefore, what you have received and heard. Hold fast and repent. But if you do not wake up, I will come like a thief, and you will not know what time I will come. Yet you have a few people in Sardis who have not soiled their clothes. They will walk with me, dressed in white, for they are worthy. The one who is victorious will, like them, be dressed in white. I will never blot out the name of that person from the book of life, but will acknowledge that name before my Father and his angels. Whoever has ears, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Wow, there's a lot in there. It was meant for the church of Sardis, but it has ever relevance to us here today. It has much relevance to the church today. It has much relevance for us as Christians here today. It has much relevance for us in our personal lives. But who is saying all this? I'd like to paint a picture of the throne from other passages in Revelation. Revelation 4:5, from the throne came flashes of lightning, rumblings, and peals of thunder. In front of the throne, seven lamps were blazing. These are the seven spirits of God. And then in Revelation 5:6-8, then I saw the Lamb, looking as if it had been slain, standing in the center of the throne, encircled by four living creatures and the elders. The Lamb had seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent into all the earth. He went and he took the scroll from the right hand of him who sat on the throne. And when he had taken it, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb. Each one had a harp, and they were holding golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of God's people. So from these further passages in Revelation, we see that the sevenfold Spirit of God is Jesus. And what does he say to Sardis? I know your deeds. You have a reputation for being alive, but you are dead. Wake up. Strengthen what remains and is about to die, for I have found your deeds unfinished in the sight of my God. When I was reading this passage, it brought me back to another passage that I've already highlighted here up front. It reminded me of when Jesus was walking on this earth and he looked at the Pharisees and he said, "Oh, you whitewashed tombs." Matthew 23:27-28. "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and every unclean thing. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." Wow. So you mean on the outside I can appear like I have everything together? I can appear like I'm a good Christian, but I can still be full of death and decay on the inside? Jesus was saying to the church at Sardis, "I know your deeds. They're unfinished. You need to finish them." Here in the physical world, actions are king. They are how we are judged. It's our output, our production that matters. It's what we do. In the kingdom of God, however, it's our heart, our thoughts that are primary. It's the inner man and inner woman that's important. Some of you might remember the sermon that I talked about how we create facades on the outside. We paint this beautiful mural for others to see, but inside we're broken and we're hurting and damaged, and it's not pretty, and we try to hide that person. And we think that's how we're supposed to do it, but all that does is it makes us a hypocrite. Actions are important. What we do is important. However, they're not the most important thing in our relationship with Christ. Think of it as actions are the cart. And your heart and your relationship with Christ is the horse. And you never want to put the cart before the horse, because things can go wrong. Actions are the sides to the main course. They're the sidekick. But it is interesting that in our world, we tend to focus on actions and not the heart, not the motivation. If we can look at cooking, for example, sometimes there might be two different types of people. One hates cooking. They don't like it at all. There is nothing more they dislike than cooking. Actually, they would rather clean the toilets than cook. There's a witness. The other one, they love to cook. And you walk in their house and it smells amazing. There's always an aroma of cookies, of roast, of casseroles, breads, everything. Oh, it's always delicious. It's their passion. They put their heart and soul into making each dish. The other person eats ramen without cooking it. And they forget to put the powdered cheese in the mac. Both eat. But one has a passion to do it. It's the same in the kingdom. And it's the same thing that Jesus was calling the church. He was saying, "Hey guys, your meals aren't done cooking. You need to finish cooking. And I would submit for your consideration that a lot of what is wrong in our world and a lot of what is wrong in the church and a lot of what is wrong in our spiritual lives is because we put the cart before the horse. Because we do like the actions. Because the actions, you know, you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that, you're supposed to do this and this. We like that. We like that box you can check off. We just don't want to look at our heart. We just don't want to look at our motivations. We just don't want to hear that our motivations aren't quite right. We don't want to hear that we're selfish. We don't want to hear that we're wrong. That we have it off. That our deeds are unfinished. We don't want to hear that. This world and the people in it care more about how you perform than about who you are. And don't think that I'm only talking about the secular world and not the church. Because sometimes the church is the worst offender in this category. Sometimes we as Christians can be the most dogmatic and rigid. And I have held jobs working in both the church and the secular world. And I'll tell you one thing that I've learned for the churches and the pastors that I've worked for. I've had much better examples of servant leadership in secular corporations that are set up to make money than I have from some pastors and elders in churches. And that's a sad accusation. But it's not just an accusation, it's also, am I that way? Do I live out servant leadership? Do I live out love and caring? Am I going to care more about who someone is than what they do? It's not just about church leaders. It's not just about the church. It's about you and me, individuals, Christians, people who call themselves followers of Christ. Are we seeking Him? I don't have all the answers. I do know that it breaks my heart that the name Christian is synonymous with rude, arrogant, hypocritical, judgmental, and so on. The church in our culture is largely irrelevant. But why? Maybe if we look back at Revelation again, what the message to Sardis was, I know your deeds. You have a reputation of being alive, but you are dead. Wake up. Strengthen what remains and is about to die. For I have found your deeds unfinished in the sight of my God. Remember, therefore, what you have received and heard, hold fast and repent. But if you do not wake up, I will come like a thief in the night, and you will not know what time I have come. Did the thief come? Most of the time, if there is an issue with actions, there is usually an underlying issue with the heart, the mindset of the individual. This means that if we focus on actions only, we miss the root cause, the purpose. What is the root? What is the purpose of being a follower of Christ? In order to follow Christ, we have to have a relationship with Christ. He has to be primary in our life. A relationship with Christ needs to be our focus. It has to be the horse that leads our life. Christ must be on the throne of our lives. The foundation of life is having a relationship with Christ. We are made, we were created to have a relationship with our Creator. That is why we were made, created. That is where we find fullness, is in a relationship with Jesus. And when we put actions before the relationship as primary focus in our lives, we get our eyes off of Christ and on actions. And then we become religious and dogmatic. And we become judgmental, and everything's a list and not the heart. Another way we are called not to do Christ, that sounds weird anyways, but we're called to be Christ. We're called to follow Christ. And I don't know about you, but I'm tired of the church being regulated to the sidelines of our culture. I'm tired of the church being regulated to, well, if you're a real Christian, you're going to be a Republican. Or if you're a real Christian, you're going to be a Democrat. I'm tired of that. I'm tired of it. Because in my understanding, I have a king. It's part of a kingdom. And we love and we honor and we serve each other. But the history of the church, by and large, throughout all of the world history, and the history of the church in America is pretty much the same. It's kind of embarrassing and frustrating and depressing to look at. Because those who proclaim to follow Christ in the past have failed so many times. It's not a complete failure, but there's lots of places that the church, by and large, has failed. The church in America has been no different. There have been revivals and pockets of brothers and sisters following Christ and putting Christ first. But by and large, the church in America, the Western church, the church across the globe, has failed in our deeds. And I think that it is because the church has failed to put Christ first. See, in America, from Manifest Destiny to the slave trade, from post-Reconstruction, Jim Crow, civil rights, redlining, to leaders dominating headlines with mansions and jets and yachts, to sexual predators within the church even, to pastors and church leaders demanding that you bow a knee to them and follow their every whim, not God. The divorce rate really isn't that different in the church than outside of the church. Pornography use is about the same in the church. People use the church to assert power and control instead of serving each other. The after-church crowd is still the worst group of people to wait on in America. I don't know if you know anybody who waits tables, but the stories seem to be a lot alike. The after-church crowd, they're rude, arrogant, condescending, self-righteous, and they're horrible tippers. Talk about being whitewashed tombs. Talk about putting actions before heart. I'm going to sit in my pew. I'll sit where I sit. I'm going to sing the songs. I'm going to give. And then I'm going to go out and I'm going to treat people terribly. There's no heart change. They're going to go and they're going to be who they are in church. And then they're going to turn around and be who they want to be during the week. There should be no different person. There should be no different person that comes here in church and outside. There's plenty of people who didn't grow up in the church, didn't grow up in church culture. They'll step into a church for an event, they'll curse, and they'll be like, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that here. Here should be no different than out there. And the rest of the day. Here should be no different. What has happened to the beautiful church? The unblemished bride of Christ. That is who we are called to be. We have forgotten certain things. We have put wealth, power, prestige, and actions, such as pew warming, confessions, peace, justice, and the like on the throne instead of Christ. We use Christ as a mean to gain earthly things and power rather than seeing Him as the beginning and the end of life. This is where we go wrong. We use Jesus, we use God, our Father, our Creator, as a means to get things rather than a relationship that we need to have to live. And we can put things, like if we put peace on the throne instead of Christ. Having peace is good. I like to have peace in my life. I like it when there's no war. I like it when there's no murder. But when we put peace on the throne instead of Christ, things go awry pretty quickly. Because if we put peace on the throne, you don't necessarily need Jesus. If you put Jesus on the throne, you'll get peace. Life may not always be peaceful, but you will have peace. We need not put the cart before the horse. We should not put all of our energy into the side dishes and forget the main course. We should stop talking only about the sidekick and start talking about the hero. The focus is a relationship with Christ. That is our focus. That is our calling. That was why we were created. And if we focus on actions and certain things that we need to do, we're going to get it wrong. We're going to become hypocritical. We're just going to become some religious person that's going to check off all the boxes, do all this stuff right, but we're going to forget the relationship. And we're going to start to decay inside. It may not happen right away, but there will come a day that we're going to end up as the Pharisees and Jesus looking at us and saying, oh, you're full of dead man's bones inside. We'll find ourselves in the same place of Sardis with him saying, your deeds are unfinished. Because if our heart doesn't change, it doesn't matter what we do. We're going to continue to rot inside. If we focus on our relationship with Christ, does that mean that life is going to be perfect? No pain, no disappointment, no heartache, no struggle? If we focus on our relationship with Christ and we tithe, does that mean we're going to become millionaires because we're sowing into the kingdom? Does that mean that there's going to be no financial hardship? Does it mean that there's not going to be war? Does it mean that we will not be persecuted? No. It does mean that we'll have a relationship with Christ. And it does mean that he will always be there to walk with us through these situations. There are plenty of people across the globe who have been persecuted for their faith walk in Christ. We have sister churches in the Ukraine that they're having to cook off of candles. Does that mean that God is not with them? No. God is walking with them. There is still life. And life here on this earth contains sin and death. And they're still rampant in this world. There's still selfishness. There's still anger. There's still bitterness. There's still disease and accidents. And we're not always able to do the things that we would like to do. But where is our hope? Where is our trust? Is it in Jesus? Are we a dead church? Are we dead Christians? Are we just whitewashed tombs? Or are we full of life? Do we seek God like the cook who loves to cook? They're passionate about seeking God. They can't wait to talk with God. They can't wait to sing praises to him. It is not enough to focus on our actions. Actions matter, but the root, the purpose of our lives is to focus on Jesus, not to focus on our actions. If we focus on Jesus, the actions will follow. That's why Paul said you're above the law. You don't need to be, you're not under the law. We have freedom. But it's not freedom to sin. We have freedom to have a relationship with Christ. And because we have that relationship with Christ, we do fall under the law. But we're not dogmatic about it. We're not just religious. We're not just doing things and being dead inside. We're being transformed daily. As children of God, we must the world. And it's easy to say we must love the world because it's kind of out there. It's not here. We must love the person who cuts us off in traffic. Mm-hmm. We must love the person who gives us a nasty look out and about. We must love our coworker who gets on our nerves. We must love our family. And that can sometimes be more difficult because we're around each other a lot and we have more ways to offend each other. But we're called to love and serve each other. And I would like to call the worship team up. And as they start playing, I'd like to read from 1 Corinthians 13. And I would just like you to take this moment to think about your own heart. Don't think about how someone else doesn't have a heartfelt relationship with Christ. Think about you and your own relationship with Christ. The steps are open if you would like to come and kneel. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but I do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I have to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but I do not have love, I am nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. And it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love.